It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalan? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
And here we go. Probably should have adjusted all this first. Anyway, hello and welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast, the only podcast in the world that was originally a pro wrestling move. It got made illegal really fast. It was horrific.
Well, actually, not because it hurt anybody. It was...
No, just you did not want to see it.
No.
No, it was relatively also ineffective.
More than horrific. Yeah, like horrifically offensive, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, and didn't even do much to it, but just it looked... Ugh.
Yeah.
If you want, you know, Google it and look for the videos, but I would not advise
it. No, I wouldn't either.
Keep children away from fire. Sorry, that was unrelated advice.
Yeah, I don't understand that part, but, yeah.
Well, it's still a good thing.
No, yeah, you're right. It's still good advice.
Yeah.
That's what counts.
Yep. All right. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 157.
157. And... it's the last episode before we cross our anniversary.
That's right. It's our last episode in our third year. So next week will be our first
of the
fourth year.
Yes.
So I guess that means we turn four next week.
Crazy. For those
or
of
three
you
next week. Sorry.
Just joining us, you are 3 years late. we have a hat. It's magical, in that it has its own email address, which people can email. That address is themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Intelligent, witty, insightful people like yourself email that address with questions, comments, topics, that kind of thing. The hat, on its own, magically transmogrifies these emails into little note cards with the information of the email written on them that manifest physically within the hat, and we, its loyal subjects or persecuted slaves, depending on your perspective, draw those out at random, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, do it for about an hour, that's the whole show. And we've been doing it for 3 goddamn years.
Now, just imagine if you went home and you found one of your hats, I don't know, a ball cap, or maybe you have a bowler or a fedora
fez,
or something.
Fez.
And you looked in it, a fez, okay, fezes are cool. And you looked in it, and there were little pieces of paper in there.
Yes.
With, like, questions and comments. You would be amazed.
Yes, you would.
We're not, but you would probably
yeah,
be.
Yeah, we actually took it in stride.
No, yeah, it's just the
normal. We're tolerant of a lot of weirdness.
It's a normal day for us.
But you guys would be freaked.
Yeah, so that's why everybody should listen, because...
I am just amazed that people, namely you and I, in this instance...
Okay.
...could be so diligent and so, you know... consistent for 3 years. We have not missed a Thursday. Something has been posted every Thursday.
No, yeah, presuming...
for 3 years straight, and to have so little of any significance out of that at all.
Yep, 3 years.
Like, basically, 3 years of every week out there.
Mm-hmm.
Take that away, have it never existed. Pretty much everyone's life is identical to where it was, except ours has a little more free time.
Well, I think you're being a little too generous. I think if you took all those episodes away,
improved.
Yeah, everything would improve.
It's like that twist they did on the sitcom trope, because they used to do the sitcom trope that looked like It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah.
And then that got old, so they did the version where the angel shows up and proves that everybody's life would be better without you.
Yeah.
And usually the way ends is the person is an asshole and they want those people to suffer, so then they come
back to
life.
Well, in our case, we don't have a choice, but...
No.
No, I mean,
this is a purely thought experiment.
The hat is evil. And so, you know, we do with the hat. You don't think that's evil?
No, I do. I get nervous every time you just say it out loud. It's right over there.
I know. But it's, I think it knows what it is.
I think it does.
I don't think it minds if it's talked about, because it, I mean, what's...
That's sort of the point.
Yeah, what's anybody going to do?
Mm-hmm. All right, so how was your week, Mr. William? It has just been 1 week this time.
Yeah. Trying to think. So let's see, we watched Bates Motel, because it came back.
Oh, still going on that,
all right. And it's all right. But there was something
else. The producer was thinking about it. She was looking.
Oh,
yeah. She was kind of looking for a new show.
What? You know.
I told her your thoughts from, actually, she may have even listened to the episode last
night. I recommend watching the film and then watching the show, because I think the most impressive thing is the guy that plays Norman is, he's really good.
Hey.
I mean, very convincing in that role based on the role in the movie.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of the storytelling in the first season is a little uneven, and some of it's a little... I mean, it's kind of... You and I have this problem in common with some things where they seem to like to do bad things to women, and not just do bad things to women, but, like, show their mangled bodies
and stuff like that.
Now, there's,
it's a given.
There's not a lot of that in it, but there's enough of it in it that it bothers... We almost stopped watching the very first episode, but the acting is really good. I don't know if the writing is spectacular.
Mm.
It's not bad, but the acting is really fun to watch. Now, also, I remember now what I wanted to ask you about. Have you been watching Community still?
I never have really been watching Community. I've seen isolated episodes. I've watched a little bit in syndication. I sort of avoid it in syndication because I feel like someday I need to sit down and watch it front to back.
Okay, well, this season is so... Here's the thing about it, and I don't want to give anything away. Although it's not one of those shows that's got a lot of plot points and character arcs or anything.
At least nothing that sticks around. Yeah.
I mean, you could almost watch them completely out of order, and it would not matter. But this, you know, it's a community college, right?
Yes.
So even when they had their third season, people were a little dubious about it because a lot of people don't attend community colleges for 4 years.
Which is why they then let Dan Harmon go for the fourth season.
But you know, that's fine. And I thought the third and fourth season were okay. Well, you know, now we're into a fifth season, I think. Yeah, fifth season, right? And
yeah, this is the fifth season.
And now it just doesn't make any sense at all. And all of the things they've done to make it make sense are ridiculous. And some of them are really obvious. At the same time, though, it's like the show seems to understand this.
No, I always assumed it was doing it very intentionally.
Well, right, but it's not just an issue of it doesn't take itself seriously, or it's making fun of itself, or it's being self-referential. It's more like they're getting it over with. This thing, they're just going, okay, we're going to do this stupid thing. You guys all know it's stupid. We know it's stupid. And then they just move right on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then basically make nothing of it. At all the rest of the season, which by itself is kind of dumb. It's like you do this plot point and now you're going to basically ignore it, but it's kind of like that's just what their thinking process is. Okay, well, let's get this out of the way. You guys all know it's dumb. We're having a fifth season and probably a sixth one because it's that whole six seasons in a movie thing they're going for. Okay, so, but then the actual episodes themselves, the acting is okay. It's mostly the writing that's really pretty sharp.
That's been the thing. Dan Harmon and the people that he gets have really tight writing.
I mean, it's kind of amazing. I mean, it's the shows themselves are like, again, because the whole it's a shaky premise for them to even have a fifth season.
Yeah.
It's kind of, but there's always a scene or some kind of interaction that's like, wow, that's amazing, or an idea. Maybe the idea for that episode is really really good. It feels strange because as a show all by itself, like if it wasn't Community, this was just some 20-minute comedy bit that someone had put together for Funny or Die or something.
Yeah.
You'd watch it and it would be brilliant. The fact that it's Community and it's all the people from Community, and there doesn't seem to be any reason for it to happening in the context of the premise of the show or for the characters to be acting the way they are, interacting the way they are. I mean, there is a little bit there, you know.
Yeah.
But
I feel like they write to their actors, though. Having seen some of those actors in other things, they do. It's a part made for them in a lot of cases.
Yeah, but most of the character stuff is, you know, abandoned. Most of the, I mean, just it's slightly there, right? Mm. But it just feels like, what season five is the writers had all these ideas for 20-minute comedy shorts, and they've shoehorned them in to Community episodes, and they're brilliant. They're brilliantly written and they're funny, but they just feels a little off.
Well. But that's the weird thing about it, because everybody said, you know, Dan Harmon was there the first three seasons, and he was gone for the fourth, he's back for the fifth. That is true, but the other thing is, he made a whole new writing team for fifth season. So essentially, other than the fact that Dan Harmon is there, I don't believe any of the writers are the people who did either season four or any of the other seasons.
Well, and there's some significant cast changes, too, which...
Yeah, there have been some changes due to various... reasons.
Which was not have not been smooth transitions at all,
yeah.
And have
well,
been posing some difficulties writing wise. But still, like the episode we just watched, and I don't know if you know we don't watch online, so I don't know if we're always a week behind because I don't.
Yeah.
But really clever. I mean, really even a little bit cerebral. But it seemed like there was nothing. I mean, it didn't. Like I said, it seemed like it was shoehorned into the Community thing. The characters were tweaked just a little bit to fit the characters and their interactions, and a little bit for you to understand that it's in this community college setting, But otherwise it's just...
I tend to feel about it the way I used to feel at the beginning of 30 Rock. Like, any time I would watch an episode of Community, I enjoy it. But I have, like, no urge to go back to it, generally speaking.
Well, yeah, it's not.
So I have no urge to be like, I should start watching the show.
Yeah, it's.
But anytime I see it, I laugh.
Yeah, it is weird that way.
And 30 Rock was that way. At a certain point, it stopped. And I don't think the show changed so much as my perception changed. Because 30 Rock was just crazy, crazy tight.
Right.
Rock just wasted nothing.
No, that's true. But it seems to me like Community's writing is. It's richer. I mean, 30 Rock, you're right. It was very tight. Like you said, wasted nothing.
But it was jokes. I mean, it was purely
yeah,
jokes.
One after the laugh.
We weren't going for anything
no,
else in
I know,
that
one
it
gag.
It was essentially a multi-person stand-up routine.
One,
it was really good.
One but, gag after the next.
Yes.
But it was very... I mean, like the Community they just had, you know, the premise was really kind of lame. I mean, I thought it was before the show, which was, you know, they come to Greendale to test a social networking app where you rate people, right?
Okay.
And it's going to cause a lot of problems on the campus. And the reason when I first heard it, I thought it was lame was like, well, you know, first of all, it's
why would you go to a campus
well,
to
it,
do that?
Well, they were basing it on Facebook and where it started. It's like, yeah, but... This seems like
that was before we had all this
yeah,
shit this nowadays.
Is, yeah, so 2 years ago
just
or something.
Make a website,
you know,
to market it,
and yeah. And also it seemed like an obvious thing the Community would do. I mean, it's anyway.
Yeah.
But then when they actually did it, it was so creative and so interesting. They just do things on that show that 30 Rock. I mean, 30 Rock would do crazy. Off the wall things, but Community is so I don't know I can't explain it. Yeah, I mean if I wish you'd seen the show so I could talk to you about it.
The great part is all of the listeners out there really don't know if you like it or hate it at this point.
Well, that's
a little
that's
little
my
Hemlock
problem
Grovey.
Is that's my problem is I don't know if I like or hate it. I know it's funny. I know it's interesting. I know that it doesn't seem to me that anyone else is doing comedy quite like that.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, I don't know. It's strange.
It's funny, though, mentioning 30 Rock. Just today I was explaining to somebody, using 30 Rock as an example, I told them that House of Cards is the drama equivalent of 30 Rock.
Okay.
It is just, there. Nothing, everything in it is intentional. Nothing is wasted.
Yeah.
There is not a filler scene. There is not a filler episode. It's just tight. Which we are still in the middle of season two, and still, I'm just blown away. It's very similar to my experience with Battlestar Galactica.
Hmm.
It's just, and I've been trying to come to terms with why I love it, whereas on paper I should hate it in the same way that I don't ever want to see Mad Men or Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
The same reason I stopped Walking Dead, because it's shitty people doing shitty things and shitty stuff happens.
Yeah.
But for reasons I don't get, even though these people are evil, I have sympathy. I sympathize with them in some way. And that is what does it for me. That's what hooks me in somehow.
You don't think you'd sympathize with the Breaking Bad dude? Because, I mean, I've never watched it, but that's not my kind of thing.
I think it even went further. I just feel like every episode would be heart-wrenching to me.
Oh.
From what I've gotten the sense of, I'm like, I just feel like every episode would feel like, this is intense and I have to be focused. I feel like every episode would feel like work.
Yeah,
and leave me just, like, deranged. This leaves me stunned a lot, and I have lots of conversations with Trish about it. And sometimes watch the show with my mouth hanging open.
Well, I mean,
or occasionally just sit there going, oh my god, I can't believe they're doing
that. Maybe that's the thing that is the draw, is it gives you something to talk about and think, and think about.
Absolutely. But I mean, it gets chicken and egg.
Right, but I don't know if you could watch Breaking Bad and have anything to talk about. I mean, it's just horrible, you know, and you're like, well that was horrible, and then you're done.
There's lots of subtleties of writing, and there's lots of, was that a mistake? Was that intentional? Was that because of the acting? Was that because of the writing?
Oh, okay, yeah. I see what you're saying.
Really, I mean, because it's all just so, everything is deliberate. Nothing happens on that show without a reason. And the acting is phenomenal. For the whole cast, Kevin Spacey, Robin Wright in particular. But the entire cast sells it. And so many subtle things. I think I can do this without being spoilery. There is a person within the show, a cast member, who doesn't show up too often, but does sometimes, who I always thought looked kind of unattractive, to the degree that I sort of felt they did it intentionally. This person leaves the show, and later we see this person having moved away and started like a new life and a new career and stuff. And I sort of jokingly said that they looked better, and then I realized they really did. But it's in such a subtle way that I can't tell you exactly what they did. They just look more attractive now, being away from, you know, the evils and stress that are the situation. And that, I just assumed it was a casting thing, and then suddenly I'm like, no, wait, so this entire thing was deliberate.
That's interesting.
Yeah, they really, and the one episode that I didn't understand why it was even there until the very end, and I suddenly, it was like, oh my god, I understand the whole point of why we had this. And it wasn't because they just told me. It was just enough that at the end I suddenly realized the whole picture. It wasn't like, there's a twist, and no, it wasn't that kind of bullshit. No, I just sort of got it. And I don't know, I'm digging it. I'm really, really digging it.
Well, what did you do for your week then?
Not a lot. I'm still having some back issues with my incision. It's been looking weird.
I think we'd mentioned
that. Just part of it is a little inflamed and stuff, and I think it was going back to work and the brace sort of moving around. But it was weird enough that we ended up going to the ER to take a look.
Okay, good.
We were there for like 20 minutes, basically long enough for four different doctors to come in, poke at my back, and say, yeah, it looks fine.
Well, did they give you any kind of thing to put on it or anything? Where it was infected? Or?
No, because that's the thing. It doesn't seem like it's infected. It's not tender or anything.
Oh, okay.
And it's, I mean, I don't want to go into too gory details.
Okay.
It's technically healing over. But what I love is one of the doctors is like, yeah, see, this is pretty late days for a surface infection, and it's pretty early days for a deep infection. And we're like, what? What was that last bit?
So you've got that to look forward
exactly,
to, I guess.
Yeah, we got that coming.
Jeez.
But no, he said it was fine.
Are you taking antibiotics as part of your...
No, that was what they gave you. That's what they give you right off the bat. Uh-huh. They just flood the crap out of you. Like, I had IVs of this stuff when I was there. But no, I haven't since then. I'm still on some of the pain meds, which I'm almost out just because it's acting up. But I feel like a lot of the acting up at this point has to do with the situation. Like, issues in my back now, I think, are because I'm constantly wearing a brace and I can't bend. Like,
sure.
The fact that my muscles have just been restricted.
Sure.
But it was bad enough that on Wednesday I didn't go into work again. So I still haven't managed a full week. But we'll see. This coming Monday, is the doctor's appointment, where hopefully we start getting some restrictions taken off. Mm. Maybe don't have to wear the brace all the time, maybe able to drive, things like this. Maybe able to bend over. So doing that. This weekend is roller derby. Mm-hmm. First home game of the season. Stephanie, producer sister, is coming, so we can go see it. Didn't really see any movies that I recall. Playing a bunch of Skyrim still. I am now officially the Archmage of Winterhold College, which I believe was a terrible, terrible decision on their part.
On whose part?
The college.
Oh, to make you a...
To make me Archmage.
It didn't seem like much of a challenge.
Well, and I mean, it's just... I mean, aside from the fact that there's a huge staff that's senior to me.
right.
And I literally had one class.
Well, I'm just thinking about how to get to be Archmage in Oblivion was quite an arduous
task. All of them are like
that.
The companions is being the same thing. I do like two things and suddenly I'm in the elite inner circle. But here's my big issue with making me Archmage. Do you know what my magical specialty is? Hitting stuff with axes.
That's a magical specialty?
No, that's the point.
You don't do magic?
I do very little magic.
Really?
Mm. Yes, this is what I'm saying. I'm the Archmage, and part of it was out of gratitude from saving them from terrible stuff. But you know how I saved them? I hit things with axes.
Mm.
So I'm like, I really don't feel like you... The one thing is that the mage who's in charge of training for restoration feels very picked upon, that the other mages don't think that it's a real school.
Mm.
And she's like, you think it's real? And I'm like, hell yeah, because that's the one thing I've been really working on,
mm-hmm.
is healing myself. But yeah, I mean, I'll take the job. Comes with a nice office, cool perks. I got some neat robes and stuff. So yeah, I mean, I'll take it. But and now I'm Thane of like four places. I've now finally got another house I didn't have to build.
Mm.
I've got like four house Carls of varying abilities. I've killed more dragons than I can think of. I'm still a werewolf, and that's still not going very well. Every once in a while, I try and use my werewolf powers, and I die.
I don't think anyone who ever took that route ever felt like it was a positive
thing. I've been talking with a friend, and it seems, and this was true apparently with him for the vampire stuff too, if you find some very small challenges that allow you to start building up the perks in the werewolf tree and in the vampire tree,
okay. Then
it becomes much better.
Hmm.
So I need to find much more tackleable things so that I can then build up the perks. And that might help. Because I do want to sort of try it out, but okay. We'll see. My gaming group played this week. One of our members was missing, but that was okay. Because as you recall, they just got their spaceship. And they flew somewhere in their spaceship. While they were doing that, one of the characters who was easily bored flipped a lot of switches and pushed a lot of buttons. So by the time they got there, our head engineer guy really needed to take the time to make sure it didn't blow up. So he stayed on the ship while they left. They're not very good at hiding the fact that they are not of this time. So somebody caught them right away. Luckily, it's not somebody who cares. But they're on a space station above a planet that apparently is the seat of a major religious movement throughout the system that they had never heard of, which is part of what tipped people off, because it's kind of a common religious movement. But this is the main seat of power for it. And due to some problems between them and the corporation that runs the space station above the planet, nobody's allowed to go down on the planet right now. There's kind of a murder that happened.
Murder?
Yes. One of the high-level religious individuals was blown out of the sky, or technically out of space, but up on the way to the station, and of course, the cult members, the church members, whatever you want to call them, the religious leaders down on the planet are convinced that the corporation did it. And they won't let the corporation come down and investigate, because that would be silly. But we may have an out in that our friends are unaffiliated, and so we may send them down to do a little investigating.
So a corporation runs the ship
there's
dock?
Some,
or the
there's
space
some
dock?
Really useful raw materials on this planet,
uh-huh.
and the corporation is there for them, and they have a very carefully laid out deal where basically we don't bug you and your religious camps.
But what's the church get out of it?
But in the money to stay sufficient.
Oh, I see.
They can just sit around and meditate all the time and not have to worry about it.
I see.
But yeah, but it's always been a little tense, and this is not helping.
Last year you were still playing
Dresden,
and and someone was killed off, and we spent a lot of time that episode talking about that.
That was fun. A year ago. I killed a lot of people, and they kept playing and stuff. That was fun. That was fun. This time I'm being much nicer. And actually, next week, it looks like a different player is going to be gone who I don't know how to pull out of the scene immediately. So I think next week we may be playing Southeast Missouri Voluntary SWAT Team.
Actually, last year, you know what you were talking about? You were talking about, you know, you've, over the last year or so, you've tried to have what you call a more narrative game playing thing, rather than, you said you were
simulationist.
Yeah, simulationist before. And a year ago, the challenges that you faced had... Remember that episode that we titled Yes And?
I just saw somebody was looking at that.
That was me. That. And in that episode, you were talking about how that's something you need to work on as a game runner. Because you, it was, the temptation was really... You know, you want to sit back and you want to let the players decide, but sometimes they came up with things that you just couldn't help but think was stupid, and then you had to take over. But then later you regretted that. So have you, in a year's time, have you improved in that area?
I feel that I have improved. I feel like I really wish I had improved more in a year's time.
Okay.
And as I often find, there were other factors involved. Like, there were other issues. The way the Dresden game was built and what my goals for the Dresden game were didn't really work with the players I had, and so this one is changing. I was trying to force my players to do a lot of things that they either didn't want to or just aren't really capable of. And so this time I'm changing the tactic, and so far it's working pretty good. But yeah, I do think I've improved, and that game got better. And Southeast Missouri Voluntary SWAT helps a lot. I think that loosens us all up a little bit. Because I don't really care, so they can sort of do whatever the fuck they want. And they know it's not important, so they'll come up with crazy ideas without worrying that it's bad.
Another thing you said was that you wanted to, you know, sometimes in the game you would tell them, yeah, I totally saw that coming, you know, I knew that was going to happen. Or you'd tell them, I had no idea that was going to happen.
Yes.
And you were saying that you thought that you shouldn't say either one of those things, that was probably
good. I do that a lot less. I still can't help it when there's something that I've been plotting, and they do it, I'm like, yes! And I did have one the other day, because I can't drive, so one of my players has been chauffeuring me.
Mm-hmm.
And we got back in the car, and this was after they got their spaceship, and they had to pick... The limited fuel only allowed them to go to one of three different planets.
Mm-hmm.
And they got bare-bones information about them, and they had to pick one. And so they did. And so we got in the car, and I'm like, wow, I guess I'll have to figure out what's going on that planet, huh? And she's like, oh, so you didn't have it fleshed out? I said, everything I told you is as much as I know, and I invented that in the 10 minutes we were waiting for Ben to show up. To be fair, that's what I had always planned to do, but I literally just invented it right before gaming. So I'm like, yeah, no, I have no idea. My plan was that you would pick something, and then I would have to figure out what it was.
Yeah, you said that you wanted it all to be more improvisational, and you wanted to hone certain improvisational skills so that you could do what you're talking about.
And I've been rereading some of the books on that relate to gaming. Been recently looking up new improv books to get, and I discovered that when you're in the Kindle store and you type in improv and you sort by popularity, the first choice is something called Naked Dance Party with the DJ, which sounds at first like an improv troupe, but is in fact just porn.
Oh, I see.
Which I did not buy, although it was free that day. I still didn't buy it, because I'm like, we have the goddamn internet, people.
So let me ask you this. Do you find it annoying that I'm bringing up these things you said a year ago and asking how it's gone?
I don't believe so. You would know if I would, because I would be talking about how I failed at them. Then I would be annoyed. No, I think I've done pretty good.
Well, I just think it's interesting that you said these things a year ago, and I'm curious to know how they went.
I think it's going well. I still... Just coming up with stuff, it seems to be. The yes ending is tricky, of not shutting people down. I feel like I'm improving on that. The hard part still for me is just spontaneously coming up with crap. And the thing is, I do that all the time.
Well, I was going to say, I'm really surprised that would be the hard part.
But I do that all the time when nobody wants me to. Like, what? There's no pressure. I'll just come up with shit because I feel like it and I'm bored. Oh, oh. But in this one, it's like literally you have to decide what happens next.
Oh,
and I'm
yeah.
like, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
And just to be, you know, there's so many people. I only have so many accents to differentiate people. I have only so many names I can come up with.
Right.
They're on the space station. I'm like, oh, you should go to, there's the Flophouse. And I called it Lonnie's. I don't know why, because that just popped into my head. And then she's like, well, where would you recommend we eat? And I said, oh, there's this great restaurant, native food from the planet out here. And it's called, the GM can't think of another name right now. And I'm like, I almost said Lonnie's again. I don't know why. Welcome to Lonnie's. No, not that Lonnie's, the other Lonnie's. There are two Lonnie's on a space station? Yes, there are two Lonnie's.
When it comes to me in improvising, I don't think, if I were in the situation that you're talking about, I think that would be a big challenge to me too. The easiest time I have with improvising is if I'm taking on a particular character.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then for some reason it's kind of easy. You just let that character sort of take over and do stuff.
Being a player in a role-playing game.
Sure, but as far as being the GM and having to be lots of characters or having to be someone who's not a character but kind of looking yeah. down on the thing and organizing it, I think that
it's
would be harder.
It's a different skill set.
I think that'd be really hard.
And the downside is there's a lot of shit you have to do. The upside is you don't have to invest as much. There can be a thing with characters where you get sort of caught up in it and you can distance yourself when it's GM. And you also can say, fuck it, this guy's not even got a last name because he's not important. Let's move on. So you take, it's more stuff to deal with, but you take less responsibility for each part. Hmm. But yeah, that's, I'm getting it. Well, and some of the things I do, and part of this again is because now I'm becoming kind of a comedy geek too, is I try and do bits with other people a lot. And you'd recognize, you and I do, well, help the whole wrestling move thing at the beginning here. The wife and I do it. We just discussed the virtue of a house smelling like popcorn versus smelling like kitty litter. We went on for like 3 minutes about this. And I feel like that is helping me. I got to make the players comfortable.
Yeah.
If the shutting them down also communicates to them, you should not be doing this, even though I'm actually saying you should be doing this. So the more comfortable I get, the more comfortable they get. And then they provide ideas and I don't have to provide ideas.
Sure, but that works other ways too. For example, in terms of making the players comfortable I'm sure some players, or maybe sometimes even for any group of players, there's a need for some kind of direction because they're getting frustrated, you know. They need someone to give them an idea to move forward. So,
and I need to do that, and that I have to watch out for, because otherwise you have the role-playing equivalent of dead air.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and I'll just get fucking Raymond Chandler about it. It's boring? All right. Somebody walks in and starts shooting you. I have not yet figured out why or even who they are, but we'll get to it. Mm-hmm. In the meantime, roll for initiative, you know? Keep busy. Ultimately, I'm trying to focus on the fact that ultimately it's supposed to be fun.
Well, yeah, exactly.
And fun for them and fun for me. And the rest of the stuff that can be really impressive and really exciting and really memorable and really sort of impact you as a person comes while you're having fun.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't make it happen.
No,
I've had
right.
amazing campaigns that, like, impacted my life.
Sure.
But they weren't... they weren't intended to come out that way.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Somebody didn't plan for that.
Right.
I've seen people who have planned for that, and those tended to suck. I have planned for that, and those tended to suck. So now, yeah. And that's the thing. I'm easing back restrictions. The Dresden campaign was all about character focus. My players weren't all down with that. I mean, and they said they were. Some of them weren't. Some of them, I think, wanted to, but found it difficult. So I'm not doing that this time. They play their characters how they want to.
Mm.
And there's some stuff built into the fate system of you play too far away from character with it. But I'm not making them come up with huge backstories. I'm not making them dynamic. They do as much of that as they want.
Well, the Dresden thing. You guys spent tons of time just building stuff, and that.
Yes. Well, and we built. Remember, we built 500 years of future history.
No, I know. And a year ago, that's something else you said, that when you were done with Dresden, you were going to move from something that was character focused to setting focused.
Which is what this is.
Yeah.
Because it's not going to prohibit them from getting involved with characters.
Yeah.
But the responsibility is off. Because character focus inherently is work for them, and it's work that potentially hits on emotional levels that for some people are. I love it.
Mm.
I love getting a new character that has all sorts of drama and shit like that, and you know, get all up in that. But for some people, it's not. And this is just setting. And I've told them they can join me with setting. I don't think that, I'm like, if you want to throw an idea for at me, do it. I don't think they will. But in the meantime, I just keep throwing stuff, and as long as I keep it nice and loose, they can do whatever they want.
Mm-hmm.
So far, I think it's working a lot better. But it's still very early days.
Hmm.
This is basically our second, just the beginning of our second story arc. And the first one just being, you know, the shit I made up to sort of introduce them. Weird shit did happen at the end of that, though. They were left with a lot of really cool questions when it was over. Because, like, their fifth member of the Beatles, so to speak, that was with them, basically, it was called into question whether or not his identity was what he said it was, and whether or not this was deliberate on his part, or whether or not he was just brainwashed. And then, just as that question came up, he was killed. So now they're like, oh, that guy died. If that guy was that guy, what the hell?
Right.
So, yeah. William is watching children / my neighbor play out in our yard.
Yeah, I'm easily distracted when the windows are...
All right, so, yeah, and it's still light out.
Yeah.
Holy shit, I'm loving it. I really, and I do this every year, really underestimated how much the coming of spring improves my mood. It's enormous. I look forward to it, but finally, like, it's not cold outside. I can go out without a jacket, and I'm like, oh, my God. And the sun, and not freezing. Oh, I love it so much.
Yeah, it doesn't do anything for me.
Yeah.
I didn't mind the winter. I thought it was a great winter, actually.
I'm so tired of the winter.
It's the first winter we've had like this in 20 years.
I made the spring happen.
Well, good.
Did I tell you this?
I don't hate spring.
I
live here because I love all the seasons, but I don't mind
I ordered
winter.
A pair of mittens. From the day they showed up, it hasn't been mitten weather since. And I'm willing to make that sacrifice, believe me.
Okay.
All right, so hat time?
Sure.
It's a hot time. It's a hot time. Nothing. What you got?
Azure Talon.
Azure Talon. How many exclamation points?
There would be three exclamation points.
All right.
Dear dissonant and confused forced voices of the magical talking hat.
Yes.
Is it possible to know the truth without challenging it first?
Yes. Next question. No.
I honestly don't know if I understand.
Well, it gets very semantic.
Because it seems to me, I mean, I would say, yeah, sure it is. But maybe I don't understand what's being asked.
Is it possible to know something is true without having tested that? To me, this hits at questions of faith. I mean, ultimately, I can tell you stuff that is considered scientific fact, but if you're not familiar with the science behind it, can you really know it to be true?
Okay, but say from a purely logical perspective, there are things you can know are true without challenging it. I mean, you can know that a logical argument is true just based on the structure of the logical argument without having to test it or compare it to something else.
That is true, but that's a very that's a narrow margin here.
Okay.
Very seldom can you discuss things purely in logic.
So by truth, we're meaning something really broad.
You'd be able to determine truth, but it would be by the definition of this and for values of this and so forth. Yes, that's true, but that's, you know.
So by truth here, we mean like in a practical level, like just in the world as that we live in. We're not speaking abstractly.
No, we could. To me, this very quickly gets into religious areas. But I mean, yeah, can a blind person know the sky is blue without using a great deal of scientific information to verify that?
Well, but, I mean, one could ask if a blind person could even understand what blue means or anything like that.
Also true.
But, yeah, I mean, I guess the word truth is a fairly loaded word. Depends on what you mean. I think from
the word no is also fairly loaded.
I think
less
just
so than truth.
Just from a purely abstract, logical perspective, I think it's just definitely possible to know truth without challenging it first. But if you're talking about truth of a very specific kind, or if you're going more broadly, like you were talking about scientific truth, I mean, of course, scientific truth by definition cannot be known until it's challenged. It's mm-hmm. got to be tested, or you don't know it.
Well, okay, outside of a purely logical argument, which I agree works, but again, it's a very limiting factor, I believe.
Right, it's...
Outside of that,
sure.
In my opinion, if you haven't challenged something and you consider it to be true, you are taking it as an act of faith. Sort of the definition of faith for me is to take something as true that you have not verified, and verifying to me is a form of challenging.
Well, I think I agree with you on that, but I'm also thinking about this, you know, the word no here is also pretty loaded. Is it possible to know the truth without challenging it first?
Because that's the thing, to someone who believes something, generally they feel they know it.
Well, right, but...
But to an outside person, no, you
but,
just believe
but
that.
What I was going to say was, we were saying that in a purely abstract, logical way, you can know a truth without challenging it first. But if we're not defining truth that way, if, like you say, that's not a very useful definition, well, if it's not a truth like that, then it's not a truth that we can know, ever, challenge it or not.
Potentially, yes.
We can't know it. We can not know it in, well, depends on what you mean by know. Like, know it...
Well, take it weird ways. Like... You know, I know that my wife would risk her life for me unless we are put in a situation where she needs to risk her life for me. I can believe it on faith, but can I really know that until there's a time where the opportunity arises?
Yeah, right. I mean, it's like... A lot of people say, I know what I would do if someone broke into my house and tried to attack my family.
But you don't.
I mean, but it's tricky because I really hesitate to say, as I said before, if we're not talking about specific abstract logical truth, then we're not talking about something you can know in that strong sense of absolute certainty. And by absolute certainty, I mean that everybody else is going to be certain also.
Yes. Knowing only works in a very small, in a logic puzzle, which is, essentially means the only way you can be certain of things is when you know all the rules to the game in question.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And in general, we're referring to the game here as reality.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't know all the
rules to that.
But within a small setting, which is what a logic puzzle is, it's a set of rules. And if you know all the rules, anything that happens within there, you can know.
Right. And part of what makes you able to say you know it is that anyone looking at the same thing would know the same thing.
As long as, understanding the rules,
that's right.
Irrefutable, essentially.
Right. And not only that, but in that context, you do not need to challenge the truth to know it.
Because it is simply there. So what you're saying is essentially the question becomes moot because outside of that context, you cannot know something to be true. Therefore, challenging it or not is irrelevant to the question.
That's right. That's what I'm saying.
All right. Then let's rephrase.
Okay.
Do you feel one should challenge things that one is told to be true as a general policy for increased, if not definite, certainty?
Well, do I think a person should? The thing is,
Do you think it is a wise course of action?
I think that life pretty much demands that course of action, and people who don't do it are not so much... it's almost a default value to do that. And the fact that not everybody does it means they're putting up some kind of wall or resistance for some reason.
Yeah.
It's
which generally...
Because life is change. Change is always happening.
Oh, yeah.
And so it doesn't matter if you choose
to... You have to reassess constantly.
The cosmos forces you to do it. And if you don't do it, you're just resisting what nature is trying, is going to make you do.
As someone who believes you should question... And as someone who in recent years especially has gotten good at, in certain circumstances, not questioning, I think I can tell you, with sort of a foot in both camps, the reason you put up the wall, and sometimes it's highly unconscious.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Is if you really don't like what the other result would be.
No, that's true. I mean, that's part of the human condition.
I believe that this charity I'm donating to is really good? Yes. Should I question it? Yes. Will I? Maybe not, because maybe I don't want to know that secretly I'm funding drug lords, you know?
And you want to feel good about what you're doing.
Exactly.
No, that's right. That's exactly right. So,
I don't want to feel that I'm helpless, which is potentially another way.
No, that's right. So even though the cosmos is kind of forcing you to think about these things and challenge these things, I think it is fairly common in human experience across the board for there to come reasons in a person's life or reasons because of a person's culture to resist some of that challenge and push back and maybe reinterpret the facts in a way that's going to fit their preconceived notion. Yeah, that's human beings do that. I think across the board they do it.
I'm discovering, and I think I talked with the producer about this recently, so I don't think I talked about it with you, which is important, because if I talked about it with you, it essentially means I talked about it on the podcast, and so I don't want to repeat myself, but I don't think I did. Recently, and I mean, I have a place for truth. It is important. It is often important when it comes to the practical application of force and agency for people. Mm-hmm. Is someone being abused? Is someone being prejudiced against or whatever? There's a truth to that within a certain perspective and needs to be dealt with. But for a broad swath of what I would consider reality, as I get older, I'm discovering I'm way less interested in truth and way more interested in narrative. I'm way more interested in the story after the fact, because to a certain degree, the truth, to my mind, only exists in the instance it occurs. And after that, all you've got is various people's memories and or evidence.
Well, certainly that's true for a certain kind of truth. I mean, in fact, I think if we're talking about truth in terms of what's real, you know, what's happening, what's manifesting.
Well, I just remember...
That's absolutely true, what you're saying.
And where this came up is the producer and I discussing the whole JFK assassination thing again. Mm. And what it came down to is, at this point, within a very... With very small exceptions of potential ramifications, I don't care what really happened.
Yeah, you said that before.
Yeah. It's the story. I'm going with your new version, because that's an awesome story. I like that story.
It's a heartbreaking story. That's
yes.
I mean, it's like, oh my gosh.
Amazing. but there's a lot of stuff like that. I always used to think, you know, it's very important. What did you do to get to this point? And that it did shape you. It was important. Mm. But at this point, the story is what's important to me. Especially if it's the story that you believe as well. I think that says a lot more at this point, if I can see what you think you did to be brought to this point. I don't know. It's It sounds sort of almost like a tautology. And,
I don't know.
It's something I've only just recently sort of discovered in my brain, and I'm still processing the idea. But I'm sort of having less faith in truth. And for a while, that was sort of disconcerting. And now, instead, I'm seeing that I'm gaining faith in narrative. I'm in a very comfortable position to do that. A lot of the harsh truths of the world today don't touch me. So that helps. But I don't know.
Well, I think for me, truth is something that is always about, you know, what you do. I mean, there's all kinds of truth. There's scientific truth. Mm. But being scientific truth, it's always provisional. You know, there's always a limit in your knowledge, and what you think is true today might not be true tomorrow. There's spiritual truth, which for me mostly just means subjective truth. Right.
I mean, it has to be a faith issue.
Yeah, I experience something, and this is how it is to me. This is what's real to me, to the point where, you know, we've talked about a belief in a deity, a belief in God, and I have a belief in God to the extent where, you know, if someone had a gun to my head and said, is there a God, yes or no? I would say yes with absolute confidence that I wasn't going to get my head blown off. I mean, providing I was... The threat is they're going to shoot me if I get the question wrong.
Yeah.
And so there's certainty there. There's, I know it, and yet I know that I don't, quote unquote, know it.
And you don't particularly challenge it because it sort of defeats the purpose.
Right. It is faith, but it's also, it's a kind of knowing that's completely subjective. And since it's completely subjective, I don't expect other people to believe the same thing. Mm-hmm. I don't think proselytizing is right because I that's just not how
well,
it works.
That, yeah, maybe
so there's different kinds of truth, but
there's the third that I think is very important, what I guess I would call social truth. And that's the one I'm very focused on. When you're talking about groups of people, who does what to whom, who did what to whom, and why, and who was at fault. This is the stuff you deal with in small version and large version in your day-to-day life, and this is the stuff that I'm beginning to believe cannot be known. I mean, to a certain degree, yes. Somebody, a body shows up, it was killed with relative certainty from a gunshot to the head. Mm. Now, there's a possibility that something happened and that's not how they died. But you could have a crime scene that was obvious enough that that was almost certainly it. Well, in that circumstance, there was a the bullet got into the head through the agency of somebody.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But finding that may be impossible and may not even be the point necessarily. Sometimes when you're talking about culpability and guilt, the technical detail of who was doing it is not necessarily the issue.
Mm.
Often it would be. Often you want to find the person who did it, and that's the person you want punished. Usually it's that cut and dry, but that also falls in with the narrative.
Mm.
Watch enough mystery shows for that. But I think, there are too many... Well, wow, okay, this is going to be a bit tangential, and that's the problem. Somebody the other day was talking, and I feel I can say this because I can go two levels of anonymity here. A friend of mine was talking about a friend of theirs that I do not know who was married, and at the start of said marriage said, if you cheat on me, we're over. Said person's spouse cheated on them, and they were over. At no point, nothing happened. Like, they cheated and it was done, just by default, because they had said that. Now, might that have happened anyway? Quite possibly. A lot of marriages believe in monogamy without even saying it. And a lot of marriages, if someone is unfaithful, that can cause the detriment and the end to the marriage.
Sure.
Is it a guarantee 100%? No. And is it even a guarantee that it should be 100%? No. But when you make that rule right up front, when you define your reality, that's the thing. This ultimatum is essentially a truth. You have compromised the marriage if you did this. Whereas, as the producer used to say to me, if we call ourselves monogamous, A, that means if either of us has sex with anybody else, we've broken that agreement, we're screwed. But also, there's a lot of things you can do that technically don't break that agreement that in some ways can harm the marriage greater. I could have a daily lunch date with someone where we get into very deep, intimate conversations such that they know me better than my spouse knows me. And that is a huge betrayal to our relationship. But I didn't sleep with them, so technically I'm not cheating. Mm. So they become useless values. And I feel like there are a lot of social truths that are equally useless values. When you define the truth, you limit the discussion, you limit the investigation.
Hmm. Yeah, I suppose that's true.
If I say, what happened? This person was killed. What happened here? Most of the time, the answer is going to be, somebody shot them. That was bad. They should not have done it. They should be punished. 99.999% of the time, I'm even willing to say. But when you walk in there with that assumed truth that that's how these things work, you're eliminating other situations.
Well, and you by framing the reality, you determine it.
Yes.
To a degree, and you're not able even to see other possibilities, perhaps.
And don't get me wrong, I think for a society to function, even on a small scale, though it gets worse the higher you get the scale.
Sure.
Law, by its definition, is a framing of reality.
Yes.
And is necessary more and more the bigger scale you go up.
Yeah.
But you have to be aware of that, and to a degree you need to challenge it, at least intellectually. At all times, you need to be aware that the framework is there and that it's not your reality. It is a framework you put into place to try and function with other people.
Sure, which, I mean, that's the same perspective you have to take toward science. You really have to take toward everything, really. I mean, you can't test everything like you can in science, but you can be skeptical and questioning about everything like you are in science. Even I can, my belief in God, I can challenge it, I can question it, I can say, well, why do I believe that? Or why don't I believe something else? And what are the advantages and benefits of believing something else rather than believing this?
And it should have no impact on your faith.
Well, and so far it hasn't. But
yeah. Well, but
except to strengthen it. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, yeah. I mean, obviously, some people, I had a friend of mine, I would read these books that I like. There's this anthology of stuff based on Bertrand Russell's Criticisms of Christianity, and I was reading it, and this fellow was a Christian, and he said, I can't read books like that because it'll mess me up, it'll mess up my faith. And I just thought, that doesn't make any sense to me. Because
that's essentially saying there's something, like, I can be convinced otherwise.
So you don't really believe at all.
That's the thing.
You're kind of in the process of becoming a believer, maybe, but you obviously don't believe, or else
you would not be convinced otherwise.
So, and, you know, and of course I...
And if you think it's possible for you to be convinced otherwise, if I had a belief and I thought that other material would convince me otherwise, I'd be really kind of scared about my belief. So I'm dude, I feel like that means I'm wrong.
You know, I hope that I'm really open-minded when I read these things as if I could be convinced otherwise, but obviously...
Which is the best you can do.
Yeah, but obviously I know that, you know, I have this faith for a reason, and it's, I know that it's pretty unshakable. So, to be honest, I can't really say.
Hubris can step in and put you in cases of denial. It is possible, but you, as long as you are mindful of it.
Yeah, I try to be.
And you don't shy away.
Yeah, I try to be as open-minded. What I really try to do is I just try to put myself in that space.
Yeah.
I try to say, okay, let's say this is true. Let's say I believe this was true. Does this actually make more sense to me than the other way of thinking? Now, it's fortunate, it's kind of a convenient thing that the fact of the matter is when it comes to a supreme deity, there's really no way to prove it or disprove it.
Yeah,
it's one of those
yeah.
things that you're pretty safe from a, you know, no logic is going to be able to dislodge it once you've committed.
It can frequently be a very dynamic definition. So,
but
even if you could disprove some stuff, that's
right.
You can never wholly cover the bases.
But for example, I think I'm trying to remember who said this. I think it was Paul Davies in one of his books challenged the notion of a deity with a personality, because personality is a very time bound thing,
yeah.
and in our experience, that's a fact. That's not just a philosophical thing he's saying. That's a factual thing he's saying.
Yeah.
And yet, you really can't get away with a definition of the divine that isn't beyond or outside time. So how do you reconcile these two things? You know, and that's a very good question, and that's something that I think believers in a personal God really need to wrestle with and think about. Now, there's a solution to that, of course, because the fact is, that's not the only paradox when it comes to the divine.
No.
You know, the whole, can God create a stone so big he can't lift it, and all that stuff.
But you get into very dangerous territory here. A common tactic I have seen with Judeo-Christians before is, oh, it's just beyond our mind to understand. There's an answer, but we couldn't possibly understand it.
Hmm.
And I'm like, at that point, I really don't care what it is then.
You've really watered it down in that case.
And also, especially when we're trying to do things, especially when it's a religious doctrine wherein something specifically created me and wants me to do specific things. I'm like, well, you know what? Probably should have made it so I would have understood that.
Well,
I try and explain to people, I'm never denying God. I tend to be denying that person who was telling
me. No, yeah, right. that's one thing that, you know, a lot of people who have criticized atheists, for example, or agnostics or whatever. And, you know, my response to them usually is, in my experience with God, with the deity, there's no proof.
Yeah.
And it's hard for me to imagine that God's going to blame anybody for deciding not to believe in God. I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
I can't imagine a God who would...
I'm in trouble because I didn't take my brother-in-law's word for it?
Yeah.
Because I wasn't denying God. I was saying I didn't think what he was saying.
No, that's right, that's right. To me, it seems to me that any God worth having any kind of regard for would certainly understand if a person was, well, you know what, I'll believe it if I have proof. There is no proof. So how can anyone be blamed for either being agnostic?
For not going along with the social movement.
Yeah, exactly.
Because that's what it is.
Exactly.
Even if it's all based on honest to goodness truth, what we have now is the social movement
that's
based
right.
on that.
Now,
we weren't there. We have the social movement.
And of course, I like to believe, I mean, obviously I've been influenced by my parents and the culture I grew up in, but I hope, I mean, my subjective experience seems to be that I think I've had an actual personal experience with this deity, and that's why I believe.
And it would be ridiculous to deny your own faith.
No, right.
Essentially,
right.
What you'd be doing there is, wow, my brain must be broken.
well, but in other words, it's my own personal subjective evidence.
Yes.
But knowing that, you know, or believing that that's why I believe, why? How can I expect anyone else to have a different experience? You know what I'm saying? Anyone else who believes in God also has to come to it that very same way. And if they don't, that's not my business.
And, I mean,
that's between them and God, really.
You know, this is mostly going around the sexual orientation debates lately, but belief is not a choice.
Well, it doesn't
seem to be. There are tricks you can do to sort of convince yourself of things. But in general, if you believe, belief is not a choice. And that goes for both sides.
Yeah.
So not believing in something is not a choice either. I didn't pick to be atheist.
Yeah,
you didn't pick to believe
in
a deity.
Although, I would say that I would go further and say it's not a choice because either you're going to have or at least feel like or believe you have had that experience or not. And if you've had the experience, you're going to believe. I mean, you can't not if you've had that experience.
Except I've had the experience, and I did believe, and I no longer believe.
See, I find that very interesting because, well, I don't know.
It is weird. It is weird.
I mean, it's
And
it's
I don't
difficult.
Like being in that position, but...
I tend to think that It's hard for me to imagine after having the experience I've had, which I've, you know, which isn't anything I've ever talked about on the air. It's kind of a long term kind of back into the roots of me growing up experience.
Potentially, we had very different experiences.
It wasn't a one time conversion experience or some weird thing like that.
I've definitely had experiences that gave me faith, and now I don't have faith anymore.
Yeah, it's not like
but
that.
But it doesn't mean that it was the same experience as you.
Right. For me, it was more, you know, I go back as far as I can remember, and it has to do with certain connection I felt to nature and stuff. I mean, it's very involved and very long term and very. It's not like one event or a series of events.
If you, for some strange reason, wanted to stop believing in a deity, you couldn't.
Well, I don't think I could. I mean,
it's possible something could happen to cause that to happen. But if tomorrow you were just like, I want to stop believing in this. There's not something you could do. There's not anything that you know of. Like,
no.
Yes, could you be lucky enough to go to the library and pick the one book out of the shelf that's like, oh my God, this is stupid. Yeah, but I mean, like, There's not a recipe for it. It's not a conscious choice.
No, I don't. I think you're right about that.
We got so far away from there. It's weird, actually. I think we got a little bit back to the question. We kind of round-robined this one. We are way the hell over time.
Oh, okay, sorry.
And I blame that on a lack of God.
Well, thanks, Azure Talon, for your question.
Yes, thank you, Azure Talon, for your question. And the rest of you, go to the blog and tell us whether there's a God. Because we're pretty sure you know. And, jeez, now I'm seeing one of Mark's comment things, and he just has the line that says God, and it either says yes or no, and then he goes on to the next thing. And we will talk to you again next week, and hopefully then I won't be wearing a back brace, I won't be on drugs, all sorts of fun stuff. We'll have to see what happens, but it could be awesome. So in the meantime, I had some useful...
Well, thanks for being with us for 3 years.
Yes, 3 damn
And some of us have been with us since the beginning, and that's pretty awesome.
Yes, there are a few of you. Along the way, we have lost some. We have gained others.
Mm-hmm.
And although we were supposed to bring 2 of every animal and we failed, I feel like we still have enough listeners to repopulate the planet.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.